And so in keeping with continuing to have a statewide voice and to spread information and to have give and take, we're pleased now to hear from Judicial Council members, in addition to all their work on these volunteer, these committees, report to us on their liaison reports. So we'll start with Justice Ashman Gerst reporting, I believe, on the Superior Court of Mono County.
Right. Thank you, Chief. I met on April 2nd with the two Mono County judges, Judges Eller and Majid. And because I'm so involved with the Tech Committee and the Tech Task Force, I really started by explaining the current status of the task force to them. Their situation is that they have one part-time tech person who does everyday kinds of repairs. They still have an old DOS case management system, and their IT person is needed on a day-to-day basis. I asked, would you be able to participate in any kind of a group effort? And they said, they'd really would love to, but the IT person is needed on a day-to-day basis and would not be available to help with new projects. For them, transitioning to a new CMS would be difficult without the support of the AOC. Their concern would be training and the time it would take to transition. So their IT really is reliant upon the staff from the AOC. As far as staff goes, they have 6 or 8 clerks. They're short several, but they've not had to lay off anybody. However, they have not replaced 5 people who have left. So they're stretched pretty thin. On the reserve issue, they said that's going to prevent them from hiring the people that they do need, that the clerks are currently overwhelmed. While the criminal cases have remained pretty stable up there, their civil cases have skyrocketed. It's interesting because they're seeing an increase in foreclosures and personal injury cases that relate to the mountain, family law issues. They're also getting loads now of construction defect cases from those units, the condos that were built in Mammoth, that are pushing up to their 10-year statute of limitations. So they're getting very big, complex construction defect cases. They can't pay overtime based on their funds, so at 5 o'clock, that's it. They're done, no matter what. Of course, that inconveniences jurors, attorneys, and the litigants. I asked them about the court reporter situation, and they say they supply court reporters in civil only for the morning law and motion calendar. Otherwise, the attorneys have to bring their own. And, of course, there are logistics issues for reporters based on the physical location of the Mono courthouse. They've got to be they have been creative with the use of telephonic interpreting. They did have a Hmong speaker, and of course there was nobody available in the Mammoth area, but so they have used telephonic interpreting, which was very successful. They also use video arraignments, bail review kinds of matters that the sheriff's department has set up. And they're also very, very liberal when it comes to court call. They allow court call on all matters, even evidentiary motions, summary judgment motions. As I reported last time, and they wanted me to emphasize, and it certainly coincides with what was said yesterday about CEJR, they like all the education provided by CEJR and feel it's just so important. They also like the different methods of delivery. They appreciate the opportunity to go and meet with other people and exchange ideas. They also once again said they get wonderful human resources support from the AOC, which, of course, their size court, they can't do it on their own. They did want me to mention one thing. They wanted me to say that they're troubled by the ongoing hostility and antagonism that's fostered by all the accusations against the AOC. They would like to see a more offensive approach rather than seeming to be on the defensive. They also think that the relationship between the council and the CJA is greatly improved by the new chief and her availability and transparency and transparent approach to all the issues. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Justice Ashman Gerst. Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief. Justice Ashman Gerst's report brought forth a thought when you mentioned the construction defect cases in Mono County, which, frankly, it never occurred to me until you mentioned it. it's just another indication, I think. We try very hard to convince the legislature and the executive branch that the 58 counties are indeed 58 different counties facing different circumstances. And indeed, in this case, even within those counties, because of the 10-year statute of limitations, the conditions on the ground, if you will, change all of the time, and that the 58 counties and their superior courts need to have the flexibility and the funding to meet those changes. And I think that's just another indication of what we've been trying to talk about.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Presiding Judge Stout reporting on Kern County.
Thank you, Chief. First, as I may, a brief follow-up on Mono County. And being their next-door neighbor, I'm glad they didn't blame me for stealing the court reporters. So. But I do enjoy very much working with my colleagues in Mono County and a lot of collaborative efforts. Share a commissioner and, of course, appellate division, and they're very generous in reciprocal assignments, and appreciate all their hard work. On March 24th of this year, I had the pleasure of visiting the Superior Court of California, County of Kern, and their main court facility in Bakersfield. I was warmly received by Presiding Judge Colette Humphrey, former Presiding Judge Michael Bush, and their court executive officer, Terry McNally. Kern County has a population of about 850,000 and encompasses over 8,000 square miles. Geography poses significant access issues for them. There are four state prisons located within Kern County, Wasco, Tehachapi, and two in Delano. And much of our discussion focused around the effects of having these state prison facilities within their jurisdiction. They have 11 court facilities, but due to budget constraints, they've indefinitely closed the Lake Isabella or Kern River facility back in June of 2013. The Taft facility is closed 4 days a week. Two of their facilities, Delano and Mojave, were slated to be replaced by new SB 1407 funds, but due to the diversion of construction funds, both were indefinitely delayed in October of 2012. Both the Delano and the Mojave courts serve prisons, and their current condition reportedly raises serious security concerns. Often the state prison inmates are bused to court in Bakersfield to avoid the security risks attendant to hearing their matters in Delano or Mojave. That, of course, increases costs and imposes an increased burden on the judges and staff in Bakersfield. Being very concerned with security there, CEO Mr. McNally is hoping to find funding to create secure judicial parking and security upgrades at their Shafter, Mojave, and Lamont facilities. The downtown Bakersfield facilities are multi-use, and while definitely aging, they report have generally been well-maintained. Heat and air upgrades remain a significant issue, particularly in the summer. They were very grateful for the trial court facilities modification advisory committee's action this past March, addressing their inadequate plumbing system at the Bakersfield Juvenile Center. Recent flooding was apparently so bad it filled their elevator shaft, rendering it totally inoperable. With respect to access and service, due to budget constraints, all operations, counters, and phones close daily at 3 o'clock and noon on Friday. Their abandoned phone calls have increased from 20 to 40% due to vacancies. I visited their self-help center, family law facilitator offices, and they're fully booked by 10 o'clock in the morning. To help alleviate this problem, they took a portion of their allocation of the $60 million in fiscal year 13-14 to add two people to the self-help center, but they're still fully booked in the morning. As the lack of resources has severely limited their ability to provide adequate one-on-one assistance, I think they've been very creative in providing group assistance to self-represented litigants. Their court executive officer wishes he could double the physical space for their self-help center, as well as the public and staff space in their family law division. The inability to inadequately address the needs of self-represented litigants is translating into continuances and longer court hearings. I would indicate, as I was touring the facility, I was introduced to a veteran family law attorney who shared with me that back in 08-09, they thought the court had the ability then and did staff the family law division to where they were really making great strides and progress in terms of access to justice and meeting the needs of their clients. But during a part of last year, though it's improved now, last year they were down about three-quarters of the staffing they saw in 08-09. But what I was pleased with, this veteran attorney, I think someone speaking on behalf of the local bar, was saying they certainly understand the desperate situation the court's in and we're committed to appropriately working with the courts to try to function together as effectively as possible until we get through this definite challenging time. Reduction in staff, as I alluded to, is a serious concern for the court. Overall, from the authorized level in 08-09, they've incurred about a 23% reduction in staff. Staff has not received a raise in 5 years. The court had very high praise for their staff, the quality of their work, and in particular how well they've handled the increased workload, especially for as long as they have. But they are, of course, concerned about staff morale and kind of fraying around the edges, which is inevitable over the long period of time of that burdensome workload. Of the projected $100 million statewide reinvestment for fiscal year 14-15, the current court projects that about one-half will come off the top for unfunded pension health costs. Of the balance, they foresee only being able to add about 10 positions, which they indicate is clearly not enough to meet their needs. They're using a significant amount of their fund balances to invest in technology, and will be migrating to a new case management system, Tyler. Like everyone else, they're very concerned about the 1% reserve limitation. They share cash flow concerns related to payroll and the ability to invest in infrastructure. They've historically been able to manage the peaks and valleys of caseload fluctuations by hiring part-time employees from their reserves. Not being able to do so as of July 1 will further increase the burden on an already overworked staff. As their CEO told me, if I had my reserves, you wouldn't be hearing from me at all. They're authorized for 39 judges and 7 commissioners. They currently have 6 judicial vacancies, including 3 unfunded judicial positions. They also anticipate additional retirements in the next few years. The 13% vacancy is taking a huge toll on the bench in Kern. The presiding Judge Humphrey has her own calendar. In the morning I visited, she was trying to fit 60 jury trials into 5 courtrooms. I toured very busy courtrooms and observed heavy calendars. They report their criminal workload has basically doubled and the effects of AB 109 realignment have been significant. And Chief Judge Bush asked me to personally thank you for making an assigned judge available to assist with a significant influx of Prop 36 3-strike cases with potential resentencing, and found that to be a tremendous help. Civil cases coming out of the prisons are an increasing frustration due to the inability to get the cases completed in a timely manner. Most of the cases are pro pers, requiring significant resources, and they found that these cases frequently get stalled due to the movement of the inmate litigant to other state prison facilities. They are requesting that the Civil and Small Claims Advisory Committee perhaps take a look at this issue and see if there might be some possible remedies and administratively or through video proceedings. I met briefly with the director of their revenue recovery program and was very impressed with their efforts to ensure compliance with court orders. In response to increased need, they're looking into trying to find a way to start a mental health court, and I think they should be commended for keeping judicial officers assigned to juvenile court for at least 3 years, but one of their current vacancies happens to be in the juvenile court. The current court is desperately looking for help in getting their judicial vacancies filled as quickly as possible. I think this was their number one, or one of their primary concerns. They expressed concern regarding the ability of the judicial branch as a whole to recruit the best possible judicial candidates. They strongly believe this is a statewide issue. And it's not just salaries. They find that well-qualified attorneys, including government attorneys, exceed judicial salaries. But they express the belief that the percent or amount of mandatory retirement contributions has had an adverse effect statewide on the ability to recruit the best possible judicial candidates. They also cite the need for JRS 2 reform. They hope and ask for any available appropriate assistance in filling their judicial vacancies as quickly as possible. They're very grateful to the Administrative Office of the Courts for assistance that they've received. They particularly mentioned Legal Services Office and mentioned Mr. Michael Gidden, attorney in particular, as being very responsive and helpful. They were also very appreciative of the litigation unit and, of course, as I mentioned, the assigned judges program. It was a pleasure meeting with them. I met some very caring, creative, and hardworking professionals, and the residents of Kern County should be very proud of their local court, and that's my report, Chief. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Stout. I know I speak for all of counsel when council members liaison and go and meet with courts and have a face-to-face and are able to bring back these very vivid descriptions of what's happening in the courts of all sizes. And there, as reflected and mentioned already, the challenges are different in every county, but nevertheless, they all reflect the budget cuts that have affected the courts. And we talk about them in court in terms of court hardship and lack of staff and closed windows and early hours. And what we really are saying by that kind of reference is we're shutting out the public. We're shutting out people who have grievances and who are trying to press their rights. That's what the description of all of these courts' hardship is about, is we are closing and turning a shoulder on people who have a crisis, either it's familial or it's professional or otherwise. And so when you bring these facts to us, every one of us, as judge or lawyer around counsel, we cringe because we can vividly see it in our eyes, having our own experience in our own courts. So I'm grateful that you do this, and I'm grateful we're able to get this communication. I'd also point out that time and again, after hearing these liaison reports and even visiting courts, I'm just struck by the remarkable people who work in our courts, who haven't had raises for 5 to 7 years, who do multitask, who are working. The windows may close at 3 o'clock, but they're working until they can finish the work. And they're doing it with outdated materials and old technology, with fewer people, trying to work the people's business. And really, I'm grateful to have and to work with people like that in the judicial branch. Justice Miller, did you have your hand up?
No, we have public comment, though.
Yes, we do. Thank you for those reports.